Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
I'm assuming you committed to Jackson State today.
Who wouldn't? I mean, if Coach Prime is there, especially after you watch him on the Aflac commercial, he's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, what a shakeup today for them to get the top recruit in the country. We've kind of sorted that out at Sporting News today. And I don't know, Steve, I'd run this by you. I think outspoken advocate for HBCUs, I think it's awesome what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how long he'll do it, one. And two, was this like the ultimate recruiting pitch for himself to get that Florida State job down the line? And I think the answer is yes.
I think the answer is absolutely yes on that. And I think there'll be more pressure on Mike Norvell because of this, because, A, he's the one that loses out on the recruit, as you point out, and he goes to a guy with the Florida State roots who now has his team in a bowl game against South Carolina State. I think there's going to be more momentum to say come home to Tallahassee. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. And again, he has done this great job at Jackson State in 2 years. Increased the visibility of the program, got him in the Celebration Bowl. I mean, you can make the case that Hunter might be the most visible player at an HBCU since I remember Steve McNair. I kind of idolizing him on the playground a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But how long can he do it before he gets tempted into the larger conversation? And as I pointed out in my column today, that of the 13 Power 5 openings this year, there was not one African-American coach hired. Marcus Freeman being an independent, of course, and an equally big hire.
Right. Along the way, though, there were others that benefited, like Mel Tucker benefited from the openings. James Franklin was able to get a 10-year deal out of it. So there's some dominoes there. How about that?
No, and I think both of those extensions – sometimes, Steve, I just got to admit, I don't know what to think. I mean, when the coaches are making that much money,
and,
you know, Ralph Russo, who I know is a mutual friend of ours,
yes,
he made a good point on Twitter, and he probably doesn't even remember tweeting this, but he said something to the effect of the player movement intentionally has created more freedom, I think more leverage for coaches, honestly. Because, I mean, roster management's impossible right now for a college football coach.
Oh, my goodness. Billy, you are so right. Roster management is right now is the single most difficult that it's ever been in the history of the game. Between the portal. I mean, let's take an example, all right, just a quick example. Now, he hasn't gone anywhere, but if Caleb Williams wanted to go from Oklahoma to USC, there's literally nothing stopping him.
I think it's harder to manage a college roster than it is an NFL roster right now. NFL's straightforward. You have, 53 or whatever the number is. You have a draft. You have free agents. College, a guy goes. I think it changes the way you recruit. I think it changes the way you have to coach. Some of it, and I know we'll probably talk about Michigan a little bit, is, if we take Michigan for example, Cade McNamara just led them to the playoff run. And they've got this five-star kid behind them with McCarthy with a live arm. And
yep.
Can they keep those two both happy for another season? It's not going to be easy.
Well, that's what somebody had asked me earlier in the year. Jack Ham and I were talking about this. And we got asked about this by a fan at a pregame show. And this was after the Michigan State game. Why is McCarthy playing? And I said, look, I said, it's only a personal opinion from 30,000 feet. I said, but I think Jim Harbaugh is trying to keep him from transferring. That's not why you should make a decision like that. But in today's modern game, you have to think that.
And that's part of the roster management. And there's no doubt that's part of the reason why. I mean, you watch McCarthy in pieces and you see this like rocket arm, and then McNamara just kept winning, and other schools are going to go through this. I mean, we live in a environment now where I think I look at the Quinn Ewers case, where skips his senior year of high school, goes and sits on a bench at Ohio State, and now he's a quarterback at Texas, and he'll probably start next year. I guess that kind of stuff only to me – will impact the super elite college football player, who's to say what that line is?
Well, let me ask you about this. Here today, I think this is, what, the fifth year that there's been this early signing date. And you and I know there's always unintended consequences when elements like this happen. Well, this time around, the unintended consequences were Lincoln Riley left. He went to USC. Brian Kelly left. He went to LSU. Because they have to be there to get a recruiting class to either save it or whatever they can do with it. Does this recruiting date get changed when the coaches meet next month?
Maybe. I think because of everything that's changed. And, you know, with NIL and we're just in this big hurry to speed up the calendar. I mean, here in Pickerington, where I live, a really standout player named Sonny Styles reclassified, and he bumped up for Ohio State. Now, Sonny's good enough to do that. I've watched him play. He's really good. But who's to say, like I said, who's to say what the line is? And really changes things. I think it's going to change the early signing period. I think, you know, because these are recruits, it's no secret what they're doing, Steve. They're in a big hurry to get on campus so they can get 3 years in and the best of them can get to the NFL.
Well, you know, that's something Jack and I do talk about privately all the time, because the way the NFL is structured, your first contract is that four-year deal. And if you don't get franchised, that means you can be as early as 24 or 25 years of age, depending on, you know, how young you were when you got into the league. You're not going to, for your second contract. I mean, that age thing means something because it's earlier for them to attempt to get a second contract. Now, you and I both know there are no assurances, but that's how some guys are thinking now.
Yeah, and the clock on an NFL player, I think what the average career is now, I know it's not exactly long. I mean, if you're a running back, it's a no-brainer if you're a star running back, because your clock ticks a little earlier, because most of them are done by 30. And it is a wild world. I think today with us covering it, we don't cover recruiting maybe as well as some of the other sites that focus on that. I'll be the first to admit that. But as somebody that just kind of casually follows it, it is wild to see all the changes. I think the transfer portal is the craziest thing to me right now.
That, I mean, I don't know how you manage that. I mean, because you and I both know, I think you and I have kidded about this before, I ain't starting, I'm departing. Feel like in some ways that's what it comes down to for some guys.
Now, shortly here in a few weeks, you try to, you know, we all like looking ahead to next year, and you try to say, well, here's what the rosters might look like. We'll do a super early top 25 like everything else, but it's an increasingly futile exercise because I don't know what these rosters are going to look like. And this year proved that it did spice up the playoff a little bit. We got Cincinnati. I think that's great. We got Michigan winning the Big Ten. But at the end of the day, most people are going to pick Georgia and Alabama to play for the championship.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They will pick them to win. I have to ask you, obviously Ohio State's not in, but Cincinnati is. What's the reaction in state been to Cincinnati getting there?
I think most people are in favor of it because of Ohio State fans. If Luke Fickell wasn't the coach, I think it'd be a little bit different here in Columbus. But because Fickell's the coach and has built that program into something special. Now, if that last playoff spot would have came down to Ohio State versus Cincinnati, which for a time it looked like it might, now that would have gotten nasty. But you know what Luke Fickell's done, and you've been around the Big Ten long enough, I really believe he's created 90s Michigan. He's created a Ohio-heavy team.
Yep.
Got a lot of recruits from Ohio. They play hard. They play within themselves. They resemble those Michigan teams from the 90s to me. Strong secondary, strong defense, run the football. And there's an element of trestle ball to it, too. And that's why they're having success. They're in trouble against Alabama, but I'm talking to some people that like that matchup and like how they played against Georgia last year.
And let's face it, Cincinnati has a veteran quarterback that understands the speed of the game. Now, we'll find out if he understands Alabama's speed of the game. But, you know, because you and I both know, Alabama since 2017, the only games they have lost, the opponent scored 40 or better. which is, I mean, that's one of the more phenomenal stats that you'll hear out there. But since 2017, since the Iron Bowl 2017 when they lost to Auburn, all their other losses have been games where they gave up over 40.
Right. And you know, you look at that, and it's just wild to think that you got to get in a shootout with them. Now, here's my soapbox about Cincinnati playing in this, because this game is going to be divisive. You know, the Power Five proponents are going to say they don't belong there, and the Group of Five, this is our chance. I've watched Alabama in their last five semifinals beat Washington, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, and Clemson by an average of 20.2 points per game.
Right.
That's every Power Five conference in Notre Dame. So, Steve, if we're sitting there on New Year's Eve and we watch Cincinnati win by 21, I mean, how's it any different? I guess if Alabama comes out and beats them like 52-0, then,
right,
then we'll have that conversation.
Right. And I don't think that's going to happen. I'll tell you what struck me about Georgia, because they had to play Michigan. You know what struck me about Georgia when they played Alabama? Is how slow they looked.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck by how slow Georgia looked in that game. I mean, Davis was out of gas midway through the first quarter.
And you've seen this Michigan team. So I've been telling people all along, I can break down the numbers on this all you want. I can watch game, you know, you can watch the Big Ten on 60 and the SEC matchups. And I need to see it on the field for about 15 plays.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this Michigan team created so much momentum down the stretch, and it really started with the Penn State win.
Yep.
When they beat Penn State, it just snowballed from there. And he's got his most confident team yet. They've got a really good defense. Can they get pressure off the edge on Georgia? And can their receivers get a little separation on Georgia's defensive backs? If that happens and the play calling is creative, Michigan's got a chance to win that game.
And Georgia has a quarterback problem. I know Stetson Bennett has – I think he's played beyond what people have hoped, but Ojabo and Hutchinson as bookends are going to cause a lot of problems for this kid. I mean, not just a couple, because Georgia cannot afford to fall behind, because they don't have come-from-behind ability. Michigan actually does have come-from-behind ability.
And there were some things at that Ohio State game, and I was up there for that were just different. And they were different when they played Penn State, too, and I think it all revolves around on that defensive side with Hutchinson and Ojabo.
Yep.
Hutchinson dominated the Penn State game, dominated the Ohio State game. And, you know, there's a reason why he's going to be a top-five pick. And if he can get that kind of pressure on Bennett, certainly will help. Both of these teams are going to want to do the same thing. They're going to run the ball up the middle and control the clock there. And you and I have both watched enough SEC Big Ten matchups to know that natural heat's going to be on the field because of the regions involved. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think that they're offensively, they're a little more similar in style than people, I think, realize. In fact, I think the receivers for Michigan might be a little bit better than the receiver, except for the tight end. The tight end for Georgia is an exceptional player. But the running backs for Michigan are better than Georgia's.
I agree with all of that. And you just said Brock Bowers is the guy Michigan has to watch. Iowa's tight end had success on him. Teams have had success in the middle of the field a little bit, matching up the linebackers. Bowers is going to be a problem for them, and that's a guy they've got to guard. But you know, the Michigan 1-2 running back punch, and now Corum's had a month for rest. I mean, Haskins is just a tough runner. Doesn't go down on first contact. And
no.
Corum offers that little lightning in between. They that was a good team this year, man. I nothing but impressed. Other than one bad quarter in East Lansing, that was a dominant team.
Yeah, and it was a bad quarter. I mean, it really. I mean, they're up by 16 in that game. I mean, really kind of had. You know, what's interesting about the game against Michigan State is I felt like Michigan went off script, because look, Michigan State's secondary, you and I both know, is not exactly top
bad
shelf. Yeah, I use the broadcaster's term. They're not exactly top shelf.
They were bad.
Bill's honest. They're bad. Yeah, and which is true. And I felt like, okay, I understood why they were throwing the ball, but I felt when they got the 16-point lead, they could have reverted back to who they are and run the ball better, and they didn't do it. And I think that cost them in the end.
It did, and it created, you know, I wrote the hot takes like everybody else that this was one of those, and I know it was a rivalry and a huge moment for Michigan State, but equally as stunning to me was a couple weeks later when Michigan State tried to go to Ohio State and get in a track meet.
Yeah.
And that was the most stunning game plan of the year, and it's like, why would you not try to hammer Kenneth Walker at that defense? And, man, I'd barely sat down for that one, and it was over.
Right. I'm trying to think where the heck we were for that game. I guess we were here. We were home. And we're sitting in the booth. We look up and it's like, it's 35-0 in the second quarter. We're like, so what are they trying to do? So we flipped it over to the game. Like, at that point, you know, we didn't. You know, I looked at the stats and said, why is Peyton Thorne throwing so much? How come they're not running the ball? Because Walker had, what, 6 carries in the game? 6?
Right. 6 with a guy that could have. Easily, at the moment, he was pretty much a Heisman candidate and a guy that was right there in the mix, if not the favorite. He was the favorite for the Heisman after he played Michigan. So, yeah, that was a head-scratching game, and the Big Ten had a lot of turns. But at the end of the day, I think we go into next year, and you mentioned Walker or Franklin and Tucker and the extensions there. Ryan Day is probably going to get a raise if he doesn't go to the NFL, which I don't think he will.
Right.
And the conversation you and I have in the summer will be about the same 4 programs in the Big Ten East.
Right. Over and over again. That's where the power is. It's in the East, just like in the SEC, it's in the West.
Is that a good thing, you think, that we kind of bypass the West altogether?
Is that a good thing? See, but the West has to prove it at some point, don't they? They have to get into toe-to-toe with the champion of the East and have to beat him, and they haven't done it yet.
And I was also stunned at how easily Michigan disposed of Iowa. I honestly thought, given how they matched up and how Iowa had slowed them down a little bit in the past, I thought, that looks like 27-17 to me. I was completely wrong about that one. I've been wrong about a lot of things this year, but that one I was definitely wrong about.
You know what? After watching the two in person, I don't know if you saw Iowa in person at all this year, but watching the two of them in person, I'll tell you, I looked at it and I thought Michigan would win by 3 touchdowns. And the reason I thought that was is that they're better in the trenches. And with all due respect, I don't think Spencer Petras is good enough in a game like that.
And that's part of the thing with the Big Ten West. Whether you're Wisconsin or Iowa or Nebraska, who extended Frost, you just said it. That's kind of the thing I go into these matchups thinking. Is Graham Mertz good enough to win the Big Ten? Is, you know, Taylor Martinez good enough to win the Big Ten? Or Adrian Martinez or whichever – you know, quarterback they get next. Right. And they're going to have to get somebody at Nebraska to run that offense the way that Frost wants to that doesn't turn the ball over.
Exactly. Because you look in the East, Thorne's a very good quarterback. Clifford's a very good quarterback. Stroud's an outstanding quarterback. McNamara doesn't make mistakes. He's a good quarterback. That's where the good, solid quarterbacks are. They're all on this side. Right? And you look at the numbers. I mean, you know, Clifford, for example, 20 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. No offense, that's what you're looking for, right? And Stroud's numbers are even better than that.
And if Clifford does, and you guys, and I'd hate to beat this in there.
I know, everybody knows, yeah.
If he doesn't get hurt, we know.
Yeah. I mean, they scored 17 points in 18 minutes to open the game. You tell me what direction that game's headed. So, Bill... this is always – you and I just sit here and talk. You know?
I love it.
I enjoy every second of it. We will talk again soon, I hope. Happy holidays to you and yours, but it is always great having you on.
The best ones when you can just talk sports. And, hey, you guys have a great holiday, too. Thank you so much for having me on.